One way you can add heat to a debate over fossil fuels is to talk about extracting fossil fuels from federal lands. Two of the senators representing our states waded into that debate this week, announcing their sponsorship of a bill to stop new leases for fossil fuel extraction on federal land. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon and Senator Barbara Boxer of California are among the sponsors. Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders headlined the announcement of the bill in Washington this week. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, in his second term now, joins us with the details. Senator, thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you. And this bill is a bill that I've been putting together because of the challenge that is posed to the planet by the burning of fossil fuels. What we know is that carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels is a major contributor to global warming. Our temperature of the planet's already gone up by 0.9 degrees now, and that scientists say if we get to 2 degrees, it's catastrophic. And so, therefore, we have to pivot from a fossil fuel energy economy to a renewable energy economy. And in that context, it does not make sense to keep doing new leases on federal land for the extraction of coal and oil and gas. And so that's the basic vision. Those leases can facilitate extraction decades into the future, 3 decades on gas, up to 5 decades on coal. And so we shouldn't be doing new leases now that lock in extraction long past the time we need to be pivoting.
Is there any effect on existing leases, Senator?
Only existing leases are contractually locked in unless there has been no activity on them. And a lot of leases, there has been no activity. So the bill would also say no renewal of inactive leases.
So they have to prove up, in essence, to be able to hold on to those leases?
Well, yes. If they're already under extraction, then they automatically, under law, have a right to extend. And so that is off limits. But what this does is it affects not only our coal leases in the Powder River Basin. It affects offshore leases, oil drilling. It puts the Arctic off limit. It puts new leases in the Gulf off limit. It basically says we have to not only take these massive reserves that are our citizens' own reserves and leave them in the ground, but we need to exercise leadership so the rest of the world will start saying, you know what, we have reserves. We need to leave our reserves in the ground as well.
So is this an easier call to make now when fossil fuel prices are low and there's not a lot of return or incentive for exploration and extraction?
Well, there's always a lot of concern about the cost of fossil fuels, but if you facilitate the movement to a renewable energy economy, demand drops for fossil fuels and then the prices drop. And so there is not it's not the natural suggestion or inclination you might have that, well, if you restrict supply in this manner, if you facilitate a transition and replace these with renewable fuels, then, in fact, you can actually drop demand for fossil fuels.
Since there's no effect on existing leases, is there even any sunsetting of those? I mean, you said they're contractual, so it sounds like you can't go and change those by law.
No, we can't touch those. And here's the situation. We have, by various estimates, 6 to 10% of the world's proven reserves are American citizen-owned. And one-tenth of those citizen-owned American reserves have already been leased out. And so we're basically saying take the other 90% and leave them in the ground.
Leave them in the ground, but not for future use. The idea is just not to use them at all, right?
Yep. Keep them in the ground permanently. So stop drilling and stop digging. You know, it's often said if you're in a hole, you should stop digging. In this case, literally, we have to stop digging.
So this is the opposite of drill, baby, drill.
This is.
So what else is in here that might alleviate any short-term pain in the form of higher fossil fuel prices? What in here also then would guide a movement toward the further development of renewable fuel sources?
So as a global community, we have been approaching the challenge of carbon pollution in a variety of directions. One has been, let's conserve, let's insulate our buildings, let's drive more fuel-efficient cars. Another has been to produce more renewable energy, more solar, more wind. And in the last six years I've been in the Senate, we've seen a phenomenal decrease in the price of producing that energy and a explosive growth in the amount that's deployed. But we haven't touched this third direction, which is to say we can't keep doing new leases that lock in extraction decades in the future. So this is a third angle to tackle this problem. And this problem is so important to Oregon. Think about our state right now. We have a red zone driven by expanding pine beetle destruction of our forests. We have a forest fire season that's grown by 60 days in 40 years. We've even had forest fires in January.
We had one last weekend near Ashland.
The perfect example. Here we are coming into winter, and we're still having forest fires. We have much difficulty with our oysters because the Pacific Ocean is acidifying, not to mention the problems coral reefs are having. We have the loss of snowpack in the Cascades, meaning our streams are smaller and warmer. If you fish, you care about this. If you don't fish, you should care about it because it's part of the whole ecosystem that's being impacted. And then we have the drought in the Klamath Basin. So here we are with the three assets of rural life: fishing, farming, and forestry, all under attack from global warming. So this really is a war on rural America. And so this is not an urban movement. It needs to be an urban-rural effort to address this massive problem.
Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, talking about this week's introduction of the Keep It in the Ground Act. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Any idea what the rate of new leases is at this point? I'm curious to know, given, again, the low price for fossil fuels in the world, if there's been much effort to obtain new leases in recent years.
Well, there's been a habit of fossil fuel companies bidding on leases, often secure them at just rock-bottom prices, and then they sit on them. And because up till now they can just keep renewing them, it's been basically get your hands on it and hold on to it. In this case, we're saying no. We're not going to engage in that anymore because we really need to pivot, and we can't pivot if we keep putting out more land for coal, gas, and oil extraction.
So, again, any incentives then to help renewables along? Any shove in that direction?
Well, not in this particular bill. And that's why I was saying we were tackling this challenge from three directions. So we have other bills related to conservation on buildings. We have new standards for the fuel efficiency of cars. We have more effort to make trucks more fuel efficient for freight transportation and to move freight to rail. So there's many different approaches to this, but this is specifically in a direction that we haven't gone before. And I think a couple of years ago, people would say, "Well, that's a radical idea that you're going. Isn't that going to cost our treasury not to get the revenue off these leases?" But here's the thing: think about it, what it costs to the planet, the destruction of our forests and our farming and our fishing.
Senator, how does your support for the Keep It in the Ground Act square with your position thus far on the Jordan Cove LNG plant and pipeline?
Yes, on Jordan Cove, the question is a facility going to turn on extraction? And, for example, I've opposed the Keystone Pipeline. Mm-hmm. Keystone Pipeline would turn the faucet on for the extraction of basically tar sand oil. It's the dirtiest oil on our planet. The Jordan Cove won't turn the faucet on to natural gas. There's going to be a facility to export natural gas. My argument has been simply that Coos Bay has a chance to make their case that they should be that particular facility. I do think we should go slow on the export side. I know that Senator Wyden has echoed that, but that's the distinction.
So you're okay. You're gonna let the process unfold. I mean, there's no. You're not gonna take a position against Jordan Cove at this point.
I am not.
Mm-hmm. We have an email here from Alex who talks about seeing the damage done by fracking, and he wrote a fairly long note here. He's asking again about this issue, though. I mean, you're saying that it wouldn't take any new stuff out of the ground, but it does encourage fracking, doesn't it, to have an export terminal going on, taking natural gas out of the country in liquefied form?
Well, it doesn't encourage it unless it's adding to the ability for that to be exported. And there's going to be an export facility somewhere. But my focus here really is on these federal leases where we have 6 to 10% of the world's reserves in the ground. And this is why Bill Kibben came to help me launch this. As you noted, Bernie came out to help me launch it. And the reason I asked Bernie to come join me was that it's very important for this to be a green-blue coalition. And I'd been planning to put in provisions saying as we pivot from fossil fuels to renewables, we have to make sure we create living wage jobs, and we have to make sure that no workers are left behind. And Bernie is putting that bill together. He's planning to release it here in a few weeks, so I wanted to make sure he got out there, and we made a very important point about this effort not just being green, but also being green and blue. And by the way, it needs to be red as well. That is, it needs to be Republican as well. And as I noted, the huge damage is being done to the rural areas that are primarily Republican in America. They are hearing from the Koch brothers. And the Koch brothers are funding all kinds of activities and emails and foundations to try to discourage folks from taking on the damage from global warming, taking on the problem, even saying the problem doesn't even exist. But I know that when I have town halls in rural areas and people say, why are you doing this? And I say, look at what's happening in rural Oregon. People go, absolutely right. We have seen the damage to our forests from the pine beetle. We have seen the damage from the smaller streams. And so we if we're really going to tackle this, it needs to be a green, blue, red alliance.
Well, the red part of it is what does seem to be lacking at the moment, because as I look at the list of sponsors here, it includes one non-Democrat, and that is Bernie Sanders himself, who is technically an independent. Are bills thus sponsored by anybody but Republicans effectively dead on arrival in committee in the Senate?
So there's a number of reasons you introduce a bill. One is to basically do the hard work to lay out the details to forge the vision and under law how you can implement that vision. Then take that bill, and it becomes a rallying point for the grassroots. It's the grassroots that work so hard on the Keystone. It's the grassroots. You know, I had the bill on no drilling in the Arctic, but the grassroots engagement really helped get us to the point where we now have stopped American drilling in the Arctic. And we're going to need the grassroots in this case, because here's what's happening inside Congress. You have the Koch brothers, of course, big oil and coal operators, who proceeded to invest with allies $300 to $500 million in the last election. They came here to Oregon. People might recall that there were extensive ads just beating me up ferociously in August. They were doing that all over the country. And they won most of those battles. They won Arkansas, Louisiana. They won in North Carolina, in Iowa. They won in Colorado. They won in Alaska. So they now control the Senate. That doesn't mean you just sit back and do nothing. It means you put together a vision, and you have to have a team inside the building, and you have to have grassroots outside the building. And it's only that combination that makes something happen.
Senator Jeff Merkley, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Leslie and Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Senator Merkley, I want to thank you so much for being a national leader on these issues of climate and fossil fuels. It's sorely needed and deeply appreciated. And I'm calling because I'd like you to speak a little bit more to this issue of how you square your leadership on a national scale with your support of the Jordan Cove LNG proposal. And you said that it wouldn't turn the faucet on, and I just don't quite understand where you get that idea when I've been following this project now for 10 years, and there's currently, as you know, there's no LNG infrastructure on the west coast of the U.S. So California, Oregon, Washington, we have no LNG infrastructure. And the Rocky Mountain states, the gas industry in the Rocky Mountain states has been clear that they really want to open up the Asian markets to U.S. gas by creating an export facility on the West Coast. And so Jordan Cove does seem like a big option for them to vastly open up their markets to countries that are going to pay much more for natural gas than we are here in the United States.
Okay, let's get
and
a response.
So I really appreciate your national role again, but I think the science is clear. I know that the science is clear that we have to keep the majority of coal, oil, and gas in the ground, and the Jordan Cove project would vastly open up markets that currently don't have access to gas in the Rocky Mountain states.
All right. Thank you, Leslie.
Leslie, thank you for your question. And at the time that Coos Bay started to put their proposal together, there were half a dozen proposals for the West Coast. The national conversation among the executive branch was, we're going to approve one of those. And my position was Coos Bay has every right to make its case that it should be the one, if you will. In other words, there's going to be a West Coast outlet. They deserve the chance to make their case that they're the best place.
This doesn't sound like wholehearted support either, though.
Well, I've always said is I framed it in these terms. Coos Bay deserves full right to make their case.
All right. But not like you're helping shove it forward or anything like that. Let's come back to one of the aspects of the Keep It in the Ground Act. You talked about prohibiting offshore drilling in the Arctic and the Atlantic for new leases again. Then,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Now, what about for the Pacific?
Absolutely, the Pacific as well. The situation is that there is no drilling on the Atlantic and in the Arctic right now. So I kind of frame it as there's no drilling there, and we're going to prevent it. So they are off limits. There are leases already in the Gulf, and therefore the Gulf were blocking the new leases. But in both cases, it's really the same thing. No renewal of leases that are unutilized and no new leases.
You mentioned timber economy in passing in Oregon, and that brings up the question of payments to counties. And as we watch county after county have to trim services or raise taxes or some combination thereof in western Oregon because they were historically dependent upon federal timber sales, which are no longer happening at that great rate. Is there anything going on that would indicate we might be able to get payments to counties coming up or more timber cut?
Well, we've been able to sustain the payments to counties, albeit at a declining rate. Back when I was in the Oregon House, I put together a coalition of Democrats and Republicans and House and Senate members to visit counties that were then going to be affected by the 2007 potential shutdown of payments. And at that point, Senator Wyden really won the battle in the Senate to get a five-year extension under the framework of declining payments. When I went to the Senate, I started lobbying that this has to be an ongoing support because since we have federal laws that curtail the timber, therefore the federal government has to make up for that by providing this support. And each time we found a way to extend it. And the challenge is that there aren't a lot of states that benefit from these secure rural school payments. And so we've tried to keep welded to the PILT payments. That was unfortunate.
Payment in lieu of taxes.
Yes, payment in lieu of taxes. That, unfortunately, was disrupted last December when the two got separated and PILT got done and SRS didn't. We were then able to go back to SRS and get it done, but each time through a different mechanism. Once I held a
This was that with the helium bill, wasn't it?
With the helium bill, mm-hmm. And before that I held a sit-in of the Majority Leader's office to say we have to get this amendment on the transportation bill. So Congressman Waldman, our other congressmen and women, everyone's been working to keep the extension, but it is a difficult challenge each time.
Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrat of Oregon, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Great to be with you.
Take care. And that'll do it for this hour of The Exchange. More coming up.